Today is December the 7th,
Pearl Harbor Day.
Josh and Jody's 11th anniversary.
We are on page 188 as we continue with our Chumash creation class. We are going to be referring back tonight extensively to the beginning of Parshas Vayetze, which is on page, well, the page we're really going to want is page 146. So, may as well keep your hand on that place now, because we're going to be going back and forth.
But with the use of one hand, I should keep it on...
So the key start on 188. When we're ready to go back, then we'll... And you can mark it, that's right. You can do that. Yeah. Let me give a recap. Last time, we discussed how after the episode with Shechem and with Yaakov's daughter Dinah, we then had Hashem told Yaakov to go to Beis El to fulfill his pledge that he had made when he left Eretz Yisrael and he had gone to Haran. And at that time, he had said that if he comes back safely, then he will make the place where he had that dream with the ladder, he'll make that into a base of Elohim, he'll make it into a house of God. And we did last time on page 186, we had said that he came back and he had he fulfilled his pledge. He went back there and he did what he said he was going to do. And we talked last time about the death of Devorah, Rivka's wet nurse, and also Rivka herself had passed away. So now we have another similar episode. And we're going to be contrasting what we did last week with tonight's class. And as I said, also page 146. So, starting at the top of the page, Pasuk Tes, verse 9. Vayiro Elokim al Yaakov od. And God appeared to Yaakov again. Bivoomi Padan Aram. When he came from Padan Aram, which is where he had spent his time with Lavan. Vayavarach oso, and he blessed him. Vayamalo Elokim, and God said to him, Shimcha Yaakov, your name is Yaakov. Lo yikare Shimcha od Yaakov, your name will no longer be called Yaakov. Ki im Yisrael yeshemecha, rather your name will be Yisrael. Vayikrosh es Shemo Yisrael, and he called his name Yisrael. Okay, so Mrs. Starkman is asking a good question. We had said, and I'm sorry to have you jump around over here, but we had said back on page 176, we had said that after the fight with the angel, Esav's angel, and Yaakov won that fight, then in verse 29, Chavtes, Vayomer lo Yaakov yeyomer od shimcha ki im Yisrael. Your name will no longer be said as Yaakov, rather Yisrael. And the reason for the name Yisrael is ki sarisa im Elokim v'im anashim batuchol. Because you did battle with power, with God, meaning here with an angel, and with men, and you have been successful. So, his name had already been changed. So why is it being told us here that Hashem is changing his name?
It's because the first time the angel told him, and this time it's straight from God.
Okay. The first time the angel was telling him that in the future your name will be changed. The angel wasn't actually changing his name. The angel was admitting to the fact that he had been defeated, and that because of this, God would eventually change his name. Now is when that actually happens. And Hashem changes his name to Yisrael. It is interesting that it happens now, and that's one of the things we have to try to focus on, which why now? What's significant about now that his name gets changed from Yaakov to Yisrael?
Isn't it because he'll complete the Shvatah now, Binyamin's coming?
Okay, could be because Binyamin's about to be born. That's what you're suggesting, that Binyamin is about to be born, who's the 12th of the 12 tribes. So maybe at that point he has to have his name changed to Yisrael instead of Yaakov. Okay, that's a good suggestion. We continue on page 188. Yud Aleph 11. Vayomer lo Elokim, God said to him, Ani Kel Shakai. I am, now this is another name for Hashem, Kel Shakai. Pray Urve, be fruitful and multiply. Goy ukahal goyim yamimeka. A nation and a congregation of nations will be from you. Umilachim et mechalotzecha yeitzeyu, and kings from within you will come out. So here, Yaakov is being told, or I should say Yisrael is being told, that he should be fruitful and multiply. For ain't why? Because there is still more that is going to come from him. A nation, a congregation of nations, and kings are all going to come from him. So our sages teach, Rashi explains over here, that each of these statements, a nation, a congregation of nations, and kings, refer to separate things. A nation refers to the tribe of Binyamin, who has not yet been born. Binyamin has not yet been born. Benjamin is still, Rachel, at this point, is expecting Binyamin, but he's not born yet. And each of the tribes is called a nation. Each one, in and of themselves, has the status of its own nation, even though, of course, we know that we are one nation, we are one Jewish nation, but each tribe has, in itself has a status of a nation. And so, Yaakov is told that he's going to have a goy, a nation. That's Binyamin. He's also told he's going to have a congregation of nations, plural, two. Minimum of plural is always two. But what other nations would be born from Yaakov? We already have 12 tribes with Binyamin being born. Okay, so Yosef, we know, is going to split into two. His two sons, Menashe and Ephraim, will themselves become tribes. They haven't been born yet. And so, Yaakov is being told, in addition to Binyamin, you're going to have another two goyim, two nations, and they are going to be the tribes of Menashe and Ephraim when Yosef is split into two. And finally, he's told, Milachim mechalotzecha yetzeyu, that kings will come from inside of you. I want to see how they translate it here. Issue from your loins. Okay. So, kings will come from you. So, kings, again, is plural, which means a minimum of two. And it can't be referring to Yehuda, it can't be referring to the King David and the Davidic line, because David comes from Yehuda, and Yehuda had already been born. And therefore, our sages understand this phrase, kings, to mean the kings that come from Binyamin, who has not yet been born. So his descendants who will be kings have not yet come into existence. So he's being told there will be a minimum of two kings from Binyamin. Who is the first king from Binyamin? Shaul. King Saul is the first king from Binyamin. He's also our first king. Then, when Shaul was killed, he was replaced by whom? Okay, well, David HaMelech replaces Shaul, but there is a brief period of time where Shaul's son also reigns simultaneously with David. And that is Ish-bosheth. And so the plural here of Milachim, kings, will come from you, that refers to the two kings who will come from Binyamin. Hashem continues, Pasuk Yud Beis 12, and the land that I've given to Avram and to Yitzchak I will give to you, and to your seed after you I will give the land. That's the end of Hashem's speech to Yaakov, or Yisrael. Then it says, Vayal me'alav Elokim, God went up from him, ba'makom asher diber ito, in the place that he spoke to him. Vayatzev Yaakov matzeva, Yaakov erected a monument. What word do they use? A pillar of stone, okay. Ba'makom asher diber ito, in the place that he spoke to him, matzeves oven, a pillar of stone. Vayasech aleha nesech, and he poured upon it a pouring, or if you want to say a libation. Vayitzok aleha shaman, and he poured upon it oil. Vayikra Yaakov eshem hamakom asher diber ito sham Elokim Beis El. And Yaakov called the place that Hashem had spoken to him there Beis El. He named it Beis El. we're going to stop there. I don't know if we'll go any further this evening. We have a lot to talk about in these few verses. The next thing that's going to happen is Rachel giving birth. That's the next step in the story. And that we're pausing here to examine these, soak in these verses. And if we have time tonight, we'll go on to Rachel's birth. Otherwise, we'll leave that for next week. Yeah.
Question. This is probably a stupid question.
Questions are rarely stupid.
Goy is nation.
Correct.
Yes. When did it become more common to
Gentiles.
To say goy as Gentile?
Because it means nations. That's the word only. That's all it means. It means nations. So when we say the nations of the world, we say the goyim. Because it means nations of the world. It's not a pejorative. It just means nations. That's all it means. So the term is commonly used to mean Gentiles because we say nations of the world. But this is the literal translation, and that's all it means. So that really goes back to even biblical times that the term would be used to mean nations, and it would refer to the nations of the world. Now, it's fascinating here how many times Beis El gets named. We're going to go back to page 146 in a moment. Before we do that, so we just read that Yaakov named the place Beis El. Now, before we turn, I want to show you a couple of things about how he names it over here. The Torah here is uncharacteristically wordy. If you look at how it presents it over here on page 188, you have I'm going to focus on Pesukim Yud Gimel and Yud Aleph 13 and 14. Vayalma Elav Elokim Bamakom Asher Diber Ito. God went up from him in the place that he spoke to him. Where else did he go up from him? It's a little bit funny. God went up from him, which means God departed, in the place that he spoke to him. We know he was in the place that he spoke to him. We just got finished talking to him. So if we would have just said, and God departed, we would have known he departed in the place that he spoke to him. Apparently the Torah is drawing our attention to this place. This is a significant place that he spoke to him. Then, in 14, Yudalid, Yaakov erects a pillar of stone, this monument, in the place that he spoke to him. A pillar of stone. And he poured in it libations and oil. So again, what is this focus on Bamakom Asher Diber Ito, in the place that he spoke to him? And Yaakov then calls it, in Pasuk Tezvah 15, he calls the name that God spoke to him, in case you forgot. It's the place that he spoke to him. Three psukim in a row, stressing. The place that he spoke to him, he called that Beis El.
Could it be referring to the first, second Beis HaMikdash, and third HaMashiach?
That's interesting. That's an interesting possibility. Okay. Okay. We are on page 188. So here he named the place Beis El. We're going to go back one page to page 186. Look at Pasuk Vav, verse 6. Vayavo Yaakov Luza. Yaakov came to Luz. Asher be'eretz Kanan, which is in Eretz Kanan. He Beis El. Which, by the way, if you want to know where Luz is, it's Beis El. Hu v'chol ha'am asher imo. He and all the nation that was with him. Vayiven sham mizbeach. He built there an altar. Vayikra la'makom. And he called the place Kel Beis El. Kel Beis El means God is in Beis El. Kisham, why did he call it that? Kisham, for there, Niglu Elavo Elokim, God appeared to him, Bevarachom Ipeachiv, when he ran away from his brother, back in Parshas Vayetze. So, the Torah tells us, first of all, this place is called Beis El, and Yaakov called it Kel Beis El, and then, what we read tonight is, Yaakov called it Beis El. So we have an identity crisis over here. Yes?
You know, like when you dig oil and, you know, there's this huge, that's the only thing I can think of, that there's this specific space and time and space in this human physical world where that particular place had some kind of magnificence.
So what you're saying is that this place, in this particular time, in the Chumash, this place is getting it's being put on the map. Okay. Still, it's being named and renamed several times. If hold the place, please. Go back to page 146. Now I'm going to take you in order. We're going to start on 146. Read it carefully. Then we'll go to 186 and then 188. That's what we're going to do right now. We're going to go in order over here. What happens on 146? So we all know the famous story. Yaakov is on his way to Haran, and the sun goes down, and he goes to sleep, and he has the dream of the angels going up and down the ladder. He wakes up in the morning. Well, not in the morning, excuse me. He wakes up early. And he wakes up in the middle of the night, actually, and he's shocked by just how powerful this place is. And he now knows that it's a house of God. So starting from Pasuk Yud Ches 18, Vayashkem Yaakov Vavokr, Yaakov woke up early in the morning. Vayikach es ha'evin asher sam mirah shosav, he took the stone that he placed at his head. Vayasem osa matzeva, and he made it into a pillar. Remember this word, matzeva. So Yaakov takes the stone and he puts it as a matzeva. Vayitzok shemen al rosha, and puts oil on the head of this rock, this stone. Vayikra es shem ha'makom ahu Beis El, and he called the place Beis El. Ve'ulam, however, Luz shem ha'ir l'rishona, the place used to be called Luz. So he wakes up, he takes this stone that had been by his head, and he makes it into a matzeva, a pillar. He pours oil on it, and he renames the place, which used to be called Luz, he renames it Beis El. This is the first mention of Beis El in the Torah. It is now called Beis El. This is Lindbergh, you have a question.
Isn't this where the angels, one of their interpretations, that the angels are changing places?
Correct.
Because he's leaving it.
Correct.
There? So that would be a boundary. And Luz, that's the thing that you never get rid of?
Right.
So that would be a real marker.
Correct. Correct. This is definitely a marker. This place is a marker. The Gemara.
For what?
Right. Marker for what? The Gemara tells us this place was the Beis HaMikdash, was the eventual place of the Temple Mount. That's where this took place. Okay. I made a mistake just now. Excuse me. I told you this is the first place Beis El is mentioned. That's not true. There's an earlier mention of Beis El, but when it's mentioned earlier, it's mentioned as a landmark. It's not mentioned as a place that anything happened in, it's mentioned as a landmark. You don't have to turn back. I'm going to read it to you with Avraham. In the beginning of Parashas Lech Lecha, when Avraham first comes into Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Canaan at the time, when he first comes in, if you don't have to turn. If you would like to turn, it is on page 56. It says, this is very short, you don't have to go there. It says in Pasuk, verse 8, Vayatek Misham Ahara, he uprooted himself from where he was in Eretz Canaan, and he went towards the mountain, Mikedem LeBeis El, to the east of Beis El, Vayet Ahalo, and he pitched his tent, Beis El Miyam, Beis El was to the west, Vayai Mikedem, and I was to the east, Vayiven Sham Mizbeach LaHashem, and he built an altar to Hashem. So Beis El is mentioned here as a landmark, but not as a place that Avram did anything in. It was just telling us where he was. That could mean that it wasn't yet named Beis El, but the Torah is written after Beis El was already named. The Torah was given at Har Sinai long after Yaakov named Luz Beis El. So when the Torah wants to tell us where something is, it can use names prematurely, which we find in the back in Parashas Bereishis, where the Torah describes the rivers that came out of Eden and went into Gan Eden, into the Garden of Eden. So there it says, describing the four branches of the rivers, it starts to tell us where those rivers go, and it starts using names of places that didn't exist yet. And Rashi over there comments, it's true it didn't exist yet, but the Torah is telling us a landmark, where something is, so it's using quote-unquote modern names of places, despite the fact that it hadn't happened yet at that time in history. So that could be true with Avraham here as well. It doesn't necessarily mean the Beis Elvin named yet, just telling us where it was. At any rate, the first time it's named is on page 146 when Yaakov names the place Beis El. So Yaakov, still on page 146, Yaakov names the place Beis El. He has put up this pillar, Matzeva, and he pours oil on it. Then he takes his oath. And we're not going to read the whole oath, but essentially he says to Hashem, I'll make a deal with you. If everything works out well, you take care of me, and I get back okay. Then he says, in Pasuk Chaf Beis 22, V'ha'eben hazos, this stone, Asher Samti Matzeva, that I have placed as a pillar, or as a monument, Yeh Beis Elokim, will be a house of God. V'chol Asher Titen Li, anything you give to me, Aser Asher Elach, I will tithe to you. I just want to see they use the word pillar again. Okay, so we have the pillar, and we have the oil being poured on the pillar, and we have the fact that it has been called Beis El. Now, turning again to page 186, Hashem tells him, now it's time to fulfill your promise. I took care of you. Now, go to Beis El and fulfill your end of the deal. At the top of page 186, Vayomer Elokim al Yaakov, God says to Yaakov, Kum alei Beis El. Get up and go to Beis El. Now that means it was already named Beis El. God is calling it Beis El. Why is God calling it Beis El? Because Yaakov had named it Beis El back at the beginning of Parshas Vayetzi, on page 146. So God now says to him, get up and go to Beis El. And make it, and he says over there, I'm going to read the rest of this pasuk, V'shev sham, dwell there, V'aseh sham mizbeach, and make there an altar. No altar has been made yet. We only had a monument, a matzeva. Now we have an altar. Make there an altar. Lokel anirei lecha, to the God who appeared to you, bevarchacha, mipnei Esav achicha, when you ran from before Esav, your brother, when you escaped. So now, they have to make a pilgrimage to Beis El. And Yaakov tells his family to purify yourselves. I'm skipping a verse, pasuk Gimel, verse 3. V'nakuma v'na'ale Beis El. Let's get up and go to Beis El. V'eseh sham mizbeach. I will make there an altar. L'kel ha'oneh osi b'yom t'onasi. To the God who answered me on the day of my troubles. V'ayhi imadi b'derech asher halachti. And he was with me on the path that I went. So they purify themselves. They come to Beis El. Pasuk Vav, verse 6. Vayavo Yaakov Luza, Yaakov comes to Luz, Asher Be'eretz Kanan, which is in Eretz Kanan, he Beis El. That's Beis El. Okay? So, all makes sense so far, as Yaakov called it Beis El back on page 146, and here Hashem calls it Beis El, then Yaakov calls it Beis El, now the Torah narrates that it's Beis El. Hu v'cholam Asher Imo, he and all the nation that was with him. Vayiven Sham Mizbeach, and he built there an altar. Vayikra la makom, and he called the place. What place? Beis El. All of a sudden, it's a pronoun. He called the place Kel Beis El.
Again.
Well, a little different. Kel Beis El, which means God is in Beis El. That's what Rashi says. Kel is in Beis El. God is in Beis El. Beis El means house of God. So Kel Beis El means God is in the house of God. Why did he name it Kel Beis El? So the simple meaning is he's renaming it. It used to be named Beis El. Now, Yaakov renames it. It's no longer named Beis El. Now it's going to be called Kel Beis El. Why? Ki sham niglu elavo Elokim bevarcho mipnei achiv. For there, God appeared to him when he ran from before his brother. That's what it said before. We know that God appeared to him when he ran before his brother. That's why he originally named it Beis El. So here, apparently for the same reason as on page 146, which is that God appeared to him, on page 146, he called it Beis El. Now, he feels compelled to add God's name to it. Kel Beis El. Okay, God is in Beis El. Why? Because God appeared to me when I ran before my brother. Then, we turn the page. 188, tonight's portion. And God appears to him another time, and gives him this prophecy that he's going to have another child, and nations, and kings. Then God departs in the place that he spoke to him. Yud Gimel 13. Vayame Allah Elokim, God went up from upon him. Bamakoma Sheribo Ito, in the place that he spoke to him. Why doesn't the Torah tell us God went up from him in Kel Beisel? Isn't that the new place, new name of the place? Why start using the word Makom again, the place, as if we don't know where it is? We know where it is. The place is Kel Beisel. Yaakov now, Vayatsev Yaakov Matseva, Yudal 14. Yaakov establishes a matseva. Remember that word? A pillar. The first reference to the pillar was back on page 146. Now Yaakov establishes or puts up this pillar. B'makom asher diber ito, in the place that he spoke to him. Again, it doesn't tell us in Kel Beisel, but in the place that he spoke to him. Matzeves oven, a pillar of stone. The Sephardo explains this is the same pillar of stone that he put up on page 146. Now, Vayasech aleha nesach, he pours upon it a libation. Vayitzok aleha shaman, and he pours oil on it. Now, he already poured oil on it back on page 146. Now, he does it again, but first he also pours on it a libation. A libation of what?
Water.
How do you know it's water?
It could be wine.
Could be wine. The two libations that are offered in the temple are wine and water. When is wine offered?
Karbanos.
Wine is offered every day, and also with the karbanos. When is water offered?
Sukkot.
Only on the holiday of Sukkot. Mm-hmm. Correct. Okay? So here, Yaakov puts a libation on it. Doesn't tell us what the libation is. And he puts oil on it. The Targum Yonos on Ben Uziel tells us over here that the libation that Yaakov poured, this was striking to me, because I assumed the libation was wine, because that's the typical libation. Says Targum Yonos on Ben Uziel, it was water.
So was it at the time when Sukkot would be?
Maybe. Perhaps. Remember, we've had a reference for Yaakov with Yom Kippur. We spoke about Rosh Hashanah. We had Sukkot as well. And now we have another reference to Sukkot because of libation of water.
Is this the only time that Rashi doesn't know something?
No. Because he says, I don't know. He says, I don't know why.
Does he say that?
You're talking in the previous pasuk when he says, I don't know what it's teaching us. Yeah. He says it in a few different places. He says it, for instance, at the end of Parshas Toldos. There's a place where it says that Rivka, it says, Rivka, aim Yaakov Esav, the mother of Yaakov and Esav. Rashi says, I don't... Right. The Sifsen Chacham says over there that Rashi meant he didn't know which of the Pshatim to write over there. He knew several, but he didn't know which one was correct, so he didn't write any.
But here it says that I don't know what...
It teaches us. About. Right. Right. Yeah. Okay. Then...
Why water?
Oh, we'll get back to it. Okay? I hope. Then, we're going to try to put it all together. Then... Pasuk Tezvav, Vayikra Yaakov is Shema Makom Asher Diber Ito Sham Elokim, and Yaakov called, this is very wordy, called the place that God spoke to him there, Beisel. Now, if you're going to read it straight, simply, what happened is Yaakov renames the place back to Beisel. He had named it Kel Beisel. First he named it Beisel. Then he named it Kel Beisel. Now he names it Beisel.
But God departed. Maybe that's why it's no longer Kel.
Because God's no longer in Beisel. Okay? So while he was there, it was Kel Beisel. Once he departed, now it's Beisel. Okay? Okay?
But Makom is also for Hashem saying, because Hashem is everywhere also.
Makom is another way to refer to Hashem. That is correct. It is a place. That is another way to refer to Hashem. That's correct. Okay, so we have a worker out for us to try to explain all of this. Whoops. I just dropped my cap in here. Okay, that was a little comic relief for the evening. Excuse me. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Shehakol Milvado. Why is it that Yaakov is named Yisrael here? So Mr. Starkman suggested because now we're getting the news about the 12th tribe being born. Okay? That's a valid explanation. Why is Yaakov told the news now about the fact that he's going to have a 12th tribe and about the tribes of Manasseh and Ephraim and about the kings? All of that is being told to him here. God had just appeared to him on the previous page, which for us is last week, and told him to go and take care of his side of the deal, which he does. He's told there about the death of his mother, and then God appears to him and tells him about the continuity, and the culmination of the forming of the Jewish people, with the birth of the last of the 12 tribes. And then Hashem also tells him, and I'll give the land that I promised to Abraham and Yitzchak, I will give it to you and to your seed. What happened here? When Yaakov left, when he left and went to Lavan, remember, he left for two reasons. We've spoken about this several times before. What were the two reasons why he went to Lavan? Okay, so he went for two reasons. One, to escape from Esav, and two was to get himself a wife. His mother and his father gave him two different reasons. They both told him to go. His mother told him in order that what? He escapes Esav, and his father told him, get a wife. So, his mother told him in order to get away from Esav. That's the reason. Self-preservation. You should get away to save your life. Run away to my brother Lavan. Stay there until the coast is clear. His father told him, because his father didn't know the coast wasn't clear, so his father told him, go and get a wife. Build a family. Complete the job of forming the Jewish people. His father Yitzchak, as well as his grandfather Abraham, were well aware that they were forming the Jewish people. So Abraham had Yitzchak. Yitzchak had Yaakov. It was Yaakov's job now to have the 12 tribes. They all knew it. He was, at that time, 63 years old. And Yitzchak told Yaakov, it's high time you go start a family. Go to Lavan in order to find yourself an appropriate wife and have the tribes. Remember, it was Rivka who told Yitzchak, she told him that I can't take these wives of Esav, these terrible women that Esav married, the Canaanite women that he married. If any more like that, then if Yaakov marries a Canaanite woman, then I can't live. So Yitzchak then calls Yaakov in and says, go to Lavan to find yourself a wife. So he went for two different reasons. We pointed out that when he left Lavan's house, only one of the two reasons had been fulfilled. Which one?
Get away from the wife.
He had only found a wife.
He had found himself four wives and had had most of the tribes. But Esav was still a danger. So his father's instructions had been fulfilled. He had married, and not only had he married, he also had enough wealth to be able to sustain himself and his family. He worked for his wives for 14 years, seven for each, and then he worked 6 years for his own wealth in order to raise a large family. So now he had the money to raise his family. So now he's ready to leave as far as his father is concerned. As far as his mother is concerned, he's not ready to leave because Esav was still a danger. But Yaakov leaves, and we pointed out that when finally he does encounter Esav, he first has the battle with Esav's angel, defeats the angel. That's what the angel says, in the future your name will become Yisrael. And then he meets Esav, and everything goes well with his meeting with Esav. We pointed out last week that he now gets, it says that Devorah, the wet nurse of Rivka, dies. So we said, Devorah is the wet nurse of Rivka. Where did she come from? So we said last week that she had been sent by Rivka to tell Yaakov the coast is clear. We pointed out last week, because now the coast was clear. because now he was at peace with Esau, at least temporarily. So his mother found out about it and sent a messenger, her wet nurse, Rivka, her wet nurse, Devorah, to go and tell him that the coast is clear. She dies, and Rivka also dies. Rivka dies. Why are we told about that? What's the significance of Rivka's death? Rivka's death means that Rivka had fulfilled her mission in life. Rivka had a job to do. She did it, and then she passed away. She had fulfilled her mission in life. What was Rivka's mission in life? Her mission in life was
take the heritage away from Esau.
Okay, to bear Yaakov and Esau, both, and then to orchestrate Yaakov getting the blessings. Rivka had that special prophecy, which she spoke about for many, many weeks. She's the one who had that special prophecy that the older will serve the younger. She's the one who understood that they were not going to work together, that it was going to be a competition rather than a partnership. And she was not supposed to reveal that prophecy to anybody, including her husband Yitzchak. And therefore she had to work behind the scenes, as only a woman can. And she orchestrated, men might say she manipulated, but that's fine. She did what she was supposed to do, and she made sure that Yaakov got the brachos, got the blessings, and not Esav. But that wasn't enough, because Yaakov getting the brachos and then being murdered by his brother wouldn't accomplish anything. And so she sent him away. And then she said to him, and when the coast is clear, I will send for you. The coast was finally clear, so she sends for him. And now her mission is done. She has ensured that Yaakov has the blessings. Yaakov has his well-being. He is safe. His life is no longer in danger. Yaakov has all that he needs to set the Jewish people in motion. That's her focus. What is Yitzchak's focus? Yitzchak's focus is to make sure that Yaakov produces the 12 tribes. Rivka made sure that Yaakov had the tools to produce the 12 tribes, meaning he had the blessings and he had his own physical well-being. Yitzchak makes sure that he has a wife or wives and the children in order to actually put into practice that which Rivka gave him the tools to do. Rivka gave him the tools, Yitzchak makes sure he puts it into practice. Those are their two different focuses, or I believe the word is foci, of Yitzchak and Rivka with their son Yaakov. Rivka's job is done, she passes away. Yitzchak's job is not done yet. Yes?
1, 12, 9, or 8.
The number 12 has a connotation of some sort of a completion of various strengths being brought together. But that is a separate discussion of itself to go through numbers. And we know on Pesach night, when we go through the numbers, 13, 1 to 13, and we go through what each one symbolizes, 5 of the books of the Torah, etc., that's all because each number is being told to us that each number has its own significance and what the main thing is. And 12 is the Shvatim, the tribes. So it's a good question, but I don't want to take our class over there because it's a whole discussion of itself. What we would do is we would explore every place the number 12 is used and show a common thread between them. What's that?
Class for Pesach.
Okay. When Yaakov goes to when Yaakov goes to Lavan, and he's in Basel, back on page 146, what is the deal he makes with Hashem? He says, if I come back safe and sound, then this place will be a house of God. Then, on page 186, he came back safe and sound. Hashem says, go and fulfill your promise. He goes and he makes an altar. Why an altar? Because he said, I'm going to tithe my things to you. When a person tithes animals to God, that means he's going to offer them as sacrifices. So he needs to make an altar to offer whatever he's going to offer. He needs an altar. So he builds an altar at Beis El. But he names it, he renames it, Kael Basel. God is in Basel. Here I'm going to say the opposite of what Dina said before. And that is as follows. Do I need to say, okay, let's use a sports analogy over here, only because I was recently in Philadelphia. I grew up in Philadelphia. When I was in Philadelphia recently, the World Series had not yet been over, but they were very into the whole business with the World Series. It was a big deal in the airport. So the sign said, "Home of the National League champion Phillies." Wonderful. Okay. So, but normally, do you have to say that the city is the home of the Phillies? Or here, do you have to say this is the home of the Braves or the home of the whatever teams play over here? Everybody knows what teams play over here. You don't have to say this is the home of the whoever. Unless there's something significant about that team that nobody would know about. Then you brag. And you say, oh, the home of, you know, this is something special. You don't need to say that Beth Jacob is the home of Rabbi Feldman. And we know Rabbi Feldman is the rabbi of Beth Jacob, so it's the home of Rabbi Feldman. You don't have to tell me that. It's well known. It's obvious. But if you don't know that something is there, then you need to announce it. You should know. This is the home of whoever. When you move into a new house, a new place, you send out an announcement, right? We've moved. This is our new home. Why? Because nobody knows. It seems to me that Yaakov renamed it, Kael Basel, because he had to make sure everybody knew God is here. Don't think God is not here. Because his deal with God was over. He made a deal with God. He made a deal with God 22 years earlier, that if you take care of me, I'll come back, and I will make this into a house of God, I'll give you tithes. So he did that. But now it's over. So when he gets back and he fulfills his side of the deal, he renames it Kael Basel. So we should all know that God is here. You may not realize he's here. It may not be so evident, but he is here. And that's why it says, I'm turning back one page, that's why it says, he named it Kael Basel. Why? Kisham nigluei lavo elokim b'varchom fe'achiv. Because that's where God had appeared to him when he ran away from his brother 22 years earlier. God didn't appear to him now. God appeared to him 22 years ago. So, just to say Basel, no one's going to know that God is in Basel. So he has to stress, God is in Basel. Don't think he's not here, even though he has not appeared to me in 22 years, he's still here. But then, God appears to him. Once God appears to him, he can rename it back to the name Basel. Because now it's obvious that God is here. It's obvious this is the place of God. Because God has appeared to me yet again. That's why it says in verse 15, Yaakov called the place that God had spoken to him there, Basel. Once God speaks to him a second time in that place, 22 years later, now he can drop the first word that he had added on. He doesn't need to say, God is here. We know God is there. God now has appeared to him twice in the same place. So it's obvious and clear that this is the place of God. There's no need to add that name, Kael. Why is it that God now appears to him with the business about his future, the children being born, the kings, etc.? Because this is the next stage. The first stage was the Rivka stage, getting the blessings, going to save himself. Now he's come back and everything is safe. The ace of threat is over. The love on threat is over. Yerivka dies. But the job isn't over. Now there's a secondary job, which he had already started but hasn't finished yet. And that is the 12 tribes. So here, now God appears to him a second time with the second part of his job. The first time he appeared to him, it was about his own self-preservation. But now that God appears to him, it's about finishing the job of establishing the Jewish people. Both parts are necessary for establishing the Jewish people. But one is a preliminary stage, and one is the completion of that stage. And here, Yaakov is being told, it's time, now you're going to finish the job. His wife was already pregnant. She was about to have the 12th tribe, Binyamin. And so he's told, you're going to have a 12th tribe, but after that, there's still going to be two more, and there's also going to be kings. Now, I have to point out to you, I asked you, what two more? And some of you answered Ephraim and Manasseh, which is correct. Yaakov did not know yet what those two more were going to be. Yaakov was told two more, Binyamin, and two more. Those two more may have been two more of his own sons, for a total of 14. Now, it couldn't be two more of the exact same type as his first 12, because otherwise Hashem wouldn't have split it up as Goy Kehal Goyim, a nation, a congregation of nations. That's a little bit, just tell me, three nations. The splitting of those two things sounds like they are separate. Plus, we know that the Imahos, the matriarchs, knew that Yaakov would have 12, which is why when they named their children, when Leah and Rachel named their children, they named them based on the assumption that each one would only get 3, because 12 divided by 4 is 3. And that's why when Leah had her 4th, Yehuda, she said, now I have to thank God because I got more than I deserve. And that's why after she had had 6, and Bilhah had 2, and Zilpah had 2, so she knew there were only 2 left, and when she became pregnant a 7th time, she prayed that it be a girl, not a boy, because she wanted to make sure that her sister Rachel would not be deprived of at least having 2 tribes, equal to Bilhah and Zilpah. So they all knew there were 12. So when Yaakov is being told here, that in addition to that 12, there's 2 more, this is surprising. He's not sure what this means. What 2 more? How? With whom? Is it my children? Is it my grandchildren? What does this mean? We will find later, we're not going to get to it for a while, in Parshas Vayechi, when Yaakov calls in Yosef, on Yaakov's deathbed, or close to his deathbed, when he calls in Yosef, he says to him, I'm giving you that special blessing that I received of having 2 tribes. And Rashi explains over there, Yaakov says to Yosef, I was told 2 more, but I didn't have any more sons. Therefore, it must mean that 2 of my grandsons will be elevated to the status of tribes. Rather than being part of the nation, they're going to be elevated to the status of tribes. That blessing, says Yaakov to Yosef, I'm giving to you. Your 2 sons will be elevated to that status. And that's the fulfillment of this prophecy, that there'll be 2 more nations. But Yaakov doesn't know that at this time. So Hashem is telling Yaakov, tribe, tribes, or nation, nations, and kings. And this is going to be the rest of Yaakov's focus for the rest of his life. Is going to be on establishing these 12 tribes. Not establishing himself, not himself finding a wife, himself building up the monetary capital necessary to raise a large family, not himself protecting his own life. Rather, it's going to be, from here on in, the 12 tribes. And establishing them, getting them started, and getting them set up. Yaakov, of course, will pass away in Parshas Vayechi already when we are in Egypt. Yaakov passes away in Egypt. After the whole episode of the sale of Yosef and all that we get down in Egypt, that's when he finally passes away. That's the focus of the rest of Yaakov's life.
Was his main mission to establish the 12 tribes? Unless he had Ephraim and Manasseh, that was his main goal.
Well, I don't know if Ephraim and Manasseh are the only part, but getting them set up in general. Getting the tribe set up.
Could his name have changed to Israel because at that point things were going... I mean, they weren't so easy beforehand, but now they're really going to go downhill for... and it would be like an added spiritual...
He needed it.
He's going to lose his wife. He's going to lose his son. He's going to have to deal with a famine. He's going to have to deal with...
Yeah, that there is a break, though. There is a break. At this point, Yosef is 8 years old, and he doesn't get sold until he's 17, so there's 9 more years before that happens. But there are some tragedies about to happen. Rachel is about to die, and then the whole episode with Reuven is going to happen. But you're right. That could be that it was to bolster him. That's true. We have one more loose end. Yeah?
So, the 11 tribes had trouble... You know, because Joseph had all this attention. But now,
at the end, if their father's gone, the father gives even a bracha for two more. So how did that...
Okay, we will deal with that. We will deal with that. Bear in mind that the firstborn gets a double portion.
Well, that could have been to each one of them. Yehuda? Who was the
firstborn? Reuben is the firstborn.
Of Yaakov?
Yeah.
Rachel?
No, of all the sons. Reuben's the firstborn. He's from Leah. Yeah. Yosef is the firstborn from Rachel. So we'll cover that. And we'll get to it, Lina.
Can you explain this from the Matseva?
The loose end we have, the Matseva was the Mizbeach was before. Now it's a Matseva, now he has the pillar. But what about the libation? So back in Vayetze, he poured on it oil. Here, he pours on it water and oil. And strikingly, water, not wine. Why is it... I spoke about this actually in Beth Jacob on Sukkos. Why is it that we pour water on Sukkos rather than wine? Let me explain the question. Why do we pour wine the whole year on the altar? Why wine? Because when you give to God, you have to give your best. We know this already from who? Go way back. Cain and Abel. Cain and Hevel. Because Hevel gave his best, and his was accepted. Cain gave whatever he had. He wasn't particular about making sure that it was his best. So his was rejected. And that led to the first murder. You got to give your best. You're giving to God. You give your best. You take your best animal and offer that as a sacrifice. If you're going to pour something on the altar, to pour it to God, so to speak, you're going to offer the best you have. Well, the best drink is wine. Wine is always considered to be the most exalted drink, the most refined drink, that which you serve in refined company. So you offer wine, and not just any wine, you offer the best wine. Water is the least refined of all drinks. It's the simplest drink. It just is. It's the most basic drink there is. Water. When you're thirsty, you want water. In polite company, you serve something more refined than water. So water is basic. So when you're pouring something to God, you pour wine. But on Sukkos, when we are the closest to Hashem, when we're celebrating our closeness to Him, we've just gone through Rosh Hashanah, we've gone through Yom Kippur, and now we're celebrating that pure closeness to God. When we go into the sukkah, we're surrounded by the mitzvah of the sukkah, and we are reliving the whole episode of the clouds of glory, and then we pour water. It seems so anticlimactic. You go from wine to water? How do we understand that?
But the common man just would have water, so it's reaching out to everyone.
Okay.
Rather than just the elite.
Right.
So we equate that with Torah?
And water is equated to Torah, correct.
And the matriarchs that had to be from a well.
Okay.
The well. And the first thing that Adam did was pray for water.
That's right. Because water is the basics of everything. Water is the foundation upon everything that everything else rests. Water was here before the land was here. When the world was created, on the first day it already says that there was water. It was only later that there was land. Water is the basics. That is the most basic foundation is water. In the rest of the year, we offer God our best. On Sukkos, we recognize more than any other time that God is in everything. That everything is about God. We and God are inseparable. Our relationship with Him is inseparable. We are totally, completely close to God. And it is on Sukkot more than any other time where we recognize the fact that there is no aspect of our lives that is separate from God. The most basic part of our life, which is represented by water, is all about God. And so on Sukkot, we pour water, even though water is not our best thing. But on Sukkot, it becomes our best thing because we're saying, God, You are in control of everything. We are completely and totally indebted to You. There is no such thing as a world without You. You are everything. You are our entire life. Life. Everything is about You. And we pour water to God.
The Sukkot also is the first day of
Yeah, the same idea. That's because that's the water. That's because of the water. That's the water, right? Here, right? Shafta Maimus Hasan, exactly. So here, Yaakov has a new appreciation of God. Until now, he poured oil. Oil is always to anoint something, to inaugurate something. You pour oil. That was to inaugurate a king or a Kohen Gadol. They would pour oil on their head. Oil is to inaugurate something. So he poured oil back then. Why does he have to pour oil again? He inaugurated it already back on page 146. He has to inaugurate it a second time? The answer is yes, he does have to inaugurate it a second time. Because what?
It's because he's Yisrael now?
Okay, because everything has changed now. Before, Yisrael is part of it. Before he was inaugurating the pillar as it was then. Now he is inaugurating it in its new role, which involves water. Because now this pillar doesn't only represent the God that took care of him for his 22 years of exile. Now this pillar represents the God who is there constantly, always, never leaving. I don't need to announce that God is here. God is always here. The Temple Mount is forever the place of God. It will never not be the place of God, and no one has to be reminded of that. You just open your eyes and take a look. You'll see God. There's no reason to include God's name as Kael Beis El. It's clear and obvious. And he is there constantly, always, the most basic, water. No matter what, God is there. And we know this. We know this. The temple is destroyed. There is a terrible mosque on the Temple Mount. We understand there are churches on the Temple Mount. We understand that that's what's going on. But we still know God is there, despite that. How do we know? How do we know? The wall is there. That's one explanation. That's one way we know. The wall is there. The wall will never be taken away. The whole world is focused over there. The entire world is focused over there. Where else is the whole world focused but there? There is never a time in history where that place does not become the focal point of the world. You can talk all you want about religion, about let's calm down about the whole thing, but it doesn't go away. That place, the Temple Mount, is the focus of the world since the time of Abraham. It has never been out of the focus of the consciousness of man, the Temple Mount. God is there. Everybody knows that. Everybody knows that. The only question is, who's going to control it? But everybody knows that's where God is. Beis El. You don't have to call it Kael Beis El. It's Beis El. It's as basic as water itself. And so Yaakov pours water on the Matzeva, on the pillar, and now he re-anoints it, he re-inaugurates it with more oil, because now it is the place where God is constantly, without ceasing. Kael Beis El becomes Beis El. Next week, Blinetto, we will cover the birth of Binyamin. Okay, what you're really asking is how come I'm saying Beis El, which is also Aleph Lamed? Right. But I'm saying Beis El, the second part of Beis El is also God's name.
All right.
Right? But Beis El is a name, Beis El. That's why you can use, it's my name is Daniel. It's got God's name at the end. But you can still say it, the name Eliyahu. Right? It's got God's name in the beginning. But it's part of a name. So you can say it. But when Yaakov named it Kael Beis El, it wasn't just a name. He was saying God is in Beis El. He was using the name of God. That's why I'm saying Kael. In the Chumash's term, it's not Kael, it's El.
Right.
But I'm just using it because I don't want to say God's name. Next week, today's the Sunday. Next week is the Yeshiva Or Yisrael dinner. As a result, I would like to start a half an hour later at 8 p.m. next week, same room, but instead of 7:30, I'd like to start at 8 o'clock. Okay, I'm sorry if that inconveniences everybody. I'm hoping that way I can be in both places at the same time. And I want to remind everybody that in 2 weeks, on the 21st, we will be having this class at my home. As the first night of Hanukkah, it will be a combined class and Hanukkah Mesiba at my home. You are welcome to bring those of you who are here without your spouses, you're welcome to bring your spouses with you for that class at my home on the 21st. And that will be with latkes and other types of sufganiyot, etc. for Hanukkah. And we will have a special Hanukkah class then as well. Excuse me. So that will. I'm not sure yet if it'll be 7:30 or 8 o'clock. I'll announce it next week.